Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
From a capital perspective, from the point of view of corporations, Trump's presidency has been a mixed bag. Trump's been incompetent in a number of directions that have hurt capital's interest. This damage has exposed the fault lines, not only of Trump's presidency, but of the entire political system in the U.S.
And this is probably, I guess, maybe one of the best presidencies to talk about this, or just in general, is the fact that people have been put in power for the sake of being in power because of the corruption of neoliberalism and capital. In the election of Trump, we found out that individuals are seeking power for the sake of power and not actually to lead the country, not actually to be the leaders that they say they're going to be. And then when things stress the system, like COVID or wildfires or things like floods or any of the insanity, which is, you know, natural disaster, you really see the lack of leadership flowing at this point in time. So you really see when the cracks open up and the dam bursts, how terrible leaders are when these issues occur. You know, and let's not forget that part of this leadership failure too, with the stress of COVID and the stress of the economy, is what leads to things like authoritarian policing, which then leads to the rioting or actually protests, and that leads to individuals rioting and looting because at some point in time they just need things that they can't overget. And so, you know, it's the lack of leadership and the status quo and the influence of capital that has, in 2020 at least, really shown how bad neoliberalism is.
So the economic system is stressing the way that our political system works and sort of exposing the downfalls of neoliberalism. You know, you talked about COVID. As of today, there's been roughly 220,000 people have died in the United States. And a lot of people are pretty interested in focusing on how poorly of a job Trump did early on, and how he should have closed the borders earlier, and he should have done masks earlier, and he should have done this and that and that and this. But that's really sort of missing the point, because 100,000 people were dead as of roughly June 1st. And then since then, another 100,000 people have died. Stressing that Trump did poorly early on undersells just how truly incompetent he was and continues to be, as more and more people continue to die after COVID is more generally understood as sort of a viral disease that spreads through the air and people should wear masks. Nothing has been done to actually address the underlying reasons for the large amount of deaths. And there's really no evidence that anything will be done in the next couple months.
Yeah, and that's, I think, either by design or just from pure incompetence. You know, the fact that there's no standard protocol released to all the states, the states must follow for when somebody's considered not to be sick from COVID, is just an example of just how incompetent the entire administration is. I mean, something as simple as, you know, you have to have two tests in a row to be considered to be, you know, not COVID positive is important, but most states and don't follow that, or tracking. I mean, if you're getting a phone call 7 days after you've been reporting ill, it's harder to contact tracing when it's 7 days out. So there's a lot of things that are just happening within this COVID that's just that they're warned about, and they've had 9 months, or I shouldn't say 7 months to fix, and they still haven't fixed it yet. But that, again, is not necessarily what the focus of today's podcast is. It's more about just the inept failures that neoliberalism causes, which is that we spent so much time outsourcing things like disease control and prevention to outside groups, to the private entities like your health insurance provider or Johnson & Johnson or whoever the, you know, vaccine creators are, that when the stress happens and we have to literally put a man on the moon in 7 months, like the same amount of energy and work, the government's not ready for it. There's nobody in power. There's nobody in place. It's just been stripped away of anything that can actually make a big difference.
Not only is the government unready, they don't have the tools or resources to scrape together a plan because everything has been outsourced. And a prime example of this is the mask shortage. And we talked about this in one of our previous episodes where the government could have stepped in, centrally planned, and provided masks to everybody, but they didn't. And that's by design of neoliberalism, where there is no profit motive. And so we saw that play out, and it highlights the just power that corporations have in our lives today. And it really doesn't have anything to do with who's in power politically, because at the end of the day, the corporations are the ones kind of ruling the roost.
Yeah, they would never want to step on the toes of a big manufacturer and force them to spin up machines or begin to produce anything, just because, you know, that'd get in the way of profit motives. And then what we're left with is, you know, from the good graces of those companies, they're choosing to save lives or help you out. Now, it does become profitable if you are a seller of them. If you are a distributor of masks, yeah, sure, you can get them out and fast. But the issue is that how fast you spin something up means quality control goes down. Lots of masks get produced. You're not testing them all. We can go on for hours about why it's bad to just have surges like this. But the next part of this, and, you know, the just how insane or how just inept this government is, or the administration is that they're unable to do anything at all to fix any type of natural disaster because it's stretched so thin. So even things like the California wildfires, they're blaming it on forest management. That makes absolutely no sense. I mean, you can't vacuum up needles and save forests from burning. But because of it, because of the way the funding works there, you know, California was already using prisoners for their firefighting, you know, activities. And when they got sick with COVID because there was no management inside the prisons, guess what happens? California has nobody to go out and risk their lives to save California because there's no more prisoners because they all have COVID. So it's a, you know, scenario in which everything's been outsourced so much and stripped away because of funding issues and, you know, funding the military and cutting taxes, that you're left with these bare bones institutions that just can't survive small little wrinkles in the system. One small perturbation means that the fastest growing wavelength causes chaos.
Exactly. And that happened with wildfires. It's happening with some of the hurricanes in the South as well. We've had a terrible hurricane season. It's almost certainly caused by climate change. Trump's administration, while totally incompetent, has fundamentally not done a whole lot differently than previous presidencies, Bush or Obama, on stuff like forestry management or hurricanes. Bush totally bungled Katrina. Mm-hmm. Obama totally bungled the Deepwater Horizon stuff.
Yep. Someone should went to jail for that one. Long story short, there is a long list of failures in every single administration. That is enough that would probably jail most other, you know, leaders if it wasn't the United States. I mean, there are things that we do, like in Yemen, that Trump inherited the Yemenis bombing. Trump inherited, like he says, kids in cages. Now, he has been more cruel, potentially, than Obama was. But it doesn't mean that it wasn't already happening. The evil kicked in a little bit more, but it was still an evil act under the previous administrations. So what we're getting at in all this is that Trump is a bumbling buffoon, lots of bees there, but that actually, in some cases, has some positives, maybe. Even though for all the deaths that happened, there are some positives to the fact that he's so incredibly terrible at his job, incompetent beyond belief. And that's because any competent person may have been able to throw together any type of plans that would have saved maybe a couple thousand more lives or things like that. But really what it comes down to is enacting policies that would have been more dangerous. So yeah, Trump rolled back 100, you know, executive orders and got some tax cuts, but he hasn't started any wars. He's failed at Venezuela and Bolivia, which is awesome. You know, he's just as incompetent as Cuomo was. We can top in there. I mean, Cuomo basically started filling up nursing homes with COVID. I mean, response that makes no sense. So,
you know, we can talk about how Trump's incompetent, but we can also talk about how Cuomo is incompetent in New York. Cuomo presided over the district that had the most deaths out of any place in the world, and he was paraded around on TV as though he was doing such a great job. All the shitlibs were like, oh, I wish Cuomo were president. It was really kind of an odd, my guy's on the blue team, so he's doing a great job. New York had 30,000 people die through May. They were roughly a third of all U.S. deaths. And while New York has only had roughly 3,000 deaths since May, that's significantly better than how the U.S. has done nationally. So in some way, despite Cuomo's incompetence early on, the state of New York is in a better place. Even holding Trump up against perhaps one of the most incompetent leaders of this crisis, Trump still looks like a complete idiot.
So with the failure of the Trump administration being so, you know, terrible, there are some positives. And some of the positives is their failure to actually enact any foreign policy change means that they haven't changed anything since Obama. Everything's exactly the same. Arguably, Obama did nothing either, but nothing has changed. It's all been the status quo. There hasn't been any rush through Middle East peace process where they stole more Palestinian land. Even though, you know, Israel has encroached more and more land, it's not like they've taken over the entire country. And there's places like in South America that they failed to enact anything. And one of those places is Venezuela, where they spent thousands and thousands of hours on TV trying to paint somebody as a warlord, as a dictator. And Maduro was the worst thing ever to walk on Earth. And guess what happened? No matter what they did, they could not break the people of Venezuela. And because they got so distracted with everything else, they were unable to actually push through the change. They even brought in that war criminal from before, Elliot Abrams, to try to overthrow the Venezuela using the same playbook for the half of the 1980s.
Iran-Contra.
And it didn't work. They outlasted. They tried to assassinate them. It outlasted them. You know, so the failure of just their ability to bring in anybody competent means that they're unable to actually do any real change. And we just saw that happening in Bolivia, where after months of having dictator rule, a U.S.-led coup, they were able to vote and democratically elected the Socialist Party.
So to recap what happened in Bolivia is about 10 months ago, the U.S. decided that they wanted to do a coup in Bolivia because they were sick and tired of having a popular government run in Bolivia. And kind of economically on the side, there's been murmurings and arguments over access to lithium mining. China and Germany are sort of competing for resources to have access to lithium mining in Bolivia. And so the U.S. was like, hey, we can help you out. We'll just do a coup. It'll be easy. So the U.S. did. They did a coup, replaced the popularly elected socialist government that was led by Morales. They exiled him and they inserted basically a right-wing pseudo-fascist government. The government persisted for about 10 months. Public outrage and sort of unrest followed. So eventually elections were had on Sunday, October 18th-ish. I think I'm not sure time zone-wise when they actually ended. And the movement, socialism is I think what it is in Bolivia in Spanish, carried the day. They won the majority outright, which means there's not a second round of presidency. So you had the U.S. come in, squash the government, do a coup, replace the government. 10 months later, the people voted and replaced the original government that the U.S. meddled with.
Can't beat that, dude.
So this is probably the most visible failure of Trump's foreign policy from a pro-U.S. outlook. But when you think back and kind of look at what Trump has done from a foreign policy perspective, there's very little that he's even engaged with, let alone sort of exceeded on. You have the Khashoggi killing, where he basically told Saudi Arabia to murder a journalist. You have the botched operation in Niger. You have the generally unnecessary bombing of Iraq.
They bombed Iraq and murdered the general of Iran, right? And then Iranian shot back missiles, and he's so incompetent he can't even get the military on his side, which is crazy to me. And normally, if commander-in-chief, you can just walk in and do whatever you want.
Other than those three items and then Venezuela and Bolivia, I don't really know what Trump has done from a foreign policy perspective other than just demonstrate complete and utter incompetence at everything he touches.
Yep. He's a failure at, I mean, everything, but I mean, there's some really easy, like, you know, softball pitches that he failed. I mean, honest to God, and I'm not saying they should have, you know, won in Venezuela or Bolivia, but I mean, those are two countries that have been just torn continuously apart. I mean, it's almost as if he didn't want that to happen. Like, he didn't want to, you know, actually have regime change, which is crazy to think that, because that's exactly what it almost seems like.
Yeah, it's very clear that American capital interests are pushing for and wanted Venezuela's oil and Bolivia's lithium. And Trump was like too bored or disengaged to like follow through and get it done. Whereas I think previous presidents would have clearly demonstrated the necessary incompetence to perform a coup in a third world country. So the new president of Bolivia has expressed an interest in restoring relations with Cuba, Venezuela, Iran, China, and Russia. So this idea that U.S. sanctions will somehow damage their economy probably won't play out in the context of the world economy, because they've demonstrated an interest in aligning with other countries that have similar economic capacity to ensure that trade still carries on and that the Bolivian economy is not decimated.
Yeah, this is, you know, a good learning from the Cuban embargo, where U.S. basically crashed the Cuban economy by getting rid of trade with their sugarcane, right? Where they were reliant on U.S. trade to boost up their economy. We cut out Cuba. Cuba's entire economy falls. They try to trade with Russia. Russia at that time was USSR. They don't have the ability to trade at the same level because they were going through their own transitions. Now that we're in a more global economy, for better or for worse, guess who can exploit that? believe you can exploit that. They can align themselves with big trade partners like China, Russia, the regional trade powers, and hopefully get themselves to a state where they don't have as much devastation in their economy from it. And what's crazy is that, you know, the headline assumes that the individuals that Bolivia are aligning themselves with are some sort of evil, you know, countries that we should all hate. And you can see that it's just propaganda, pure, pure propaganda.
And it's propaganda because the U.S. capitalistic empire does not want the economic consumerism or spending from Bolivia to be redirected to their, basically their corporate enemies.
Yep. Yep. You know, they don't want to see, you know, Bolivia transition the entire region into a, you know, leftist commune where people won't have to, you know, use money anymore. Capitalism still wants capital for the sake of capital. And it's really weird how capitalism lends themselves to basically U.S. foreign policy.
So U.S. foreign policy is effectively U.S. corporate interests.
Yep. You know, it got to the part where capital wanted this so much that Elon Musk tweeted a joke about how he helped the German government overthrow the Bolivian government to get cheap lithium for his awesome Teslas. I mean, but again, Trump is so chaotic that capital can't even win with him on something that simple. Now, I'm not saying a coup in Bolivia is simple. I'm just saying that it's of the all the tasks ahead of it, it's probably easier than cleaning up a hurricane, quite honestly, because they had military support and there's no accountability. Nobody can fight back. Bolivia can't elect or hold anybody accountable from the U.S. There's no International War Crimes Tribune to grab anybody. So, I mean, it's really, you could have just put military might and ended it, but the incompetency there. And again, we're not pro any of these coups. In fact, we love the fact that Bolivia just dunked all over shitty Trump. What we're saying is just there is some positives to this in which capital doesn't win, but under neoliberalism, capital does what they want. And they will fight over and over again to get what they need. And right now it's status quo, and right now it's getting a puppet in place to do what they want. And that leads us to the final part of this podcast, which is how do we know that capital is leading us, you know, into this pseudo fascism, this authoritarian rule, because right now we're seeing capital flounder. They don't know really who to support and what to do, but we do know that they're aligning behind somebody that is more stable and is willing to do at least most of what they ask. Maybe not everything they're asking for. Maybe they won't get as many tax cuts. Maybe they won't get as many environmental lifts, but the banking industry, they want Biden. Right, the movie industry wants Biden. There's a lot of industries that want Biden. Maybe not the energy. Maybe the coal wants Trump still because of the environmental policies. But we're seeing a lot of capital doing what they can to not only support who they think is going to be stable, but also play both sides so they become in favor with those candidates.
And it's really capital taking an outlook of pro-neoliberalism, not a party position. So Bill Gates is a good example. You can go look at his donations on the FEC website.
Yep.
And he's probably donated about $100,000 to various campaigns directly. It's a roughly 50-50-ish split. So, for example, he donated $5,000 to the Harris County Republican Party Federal Committee, which is in Texas. Then he donated $5,000 to the True Dem Leadership Fund in Ohio, which is a Democratic entity. So he's really just playing both sides. He's hoping that whichever side wins, it's the neoliberal side. And this can be viewed from a couple different angles, where you take somebody like Lindsey Graham. He's been historically sort of a Republican ghoul. He's not Tom Cotton, though. He's not an openly fascist candidate. He's advocating for a pro-capital perspective. And he says stuff like, I wish the Gates Foundation would be more involved in public health care rather than the WHO. So that's a very neoliberal position. The WHO is largely a non-governmental entity that is currently fairly neoliberal that the U.S. is supporting. And Lindsey Graham is advocating that a different entity replace that entity that is controlled by one of the richest people on Earth. That's classic neoliberalism.
Yeah, and it's to the point where, you know, the leadership means that the Bill and Melinda Gates Fund, or whatever one they're pushing, means that their board controls the fund. Instead of it being international, instead of it having oversight, instead of it being appointed, you know, through multiple nations and having a world-class organization, it's a singular U.S.-based only, but through the eyes of neoliberalism. So we're trying to hoard as much medical as we can. And we saw that hand tipped when Trump was asking, you know, to buy vaccine formulas from like the German company, right? This idea that we can not only outsource policy and outsource services, but we can also use our capital to fund, hold, and control international policy.
And this push to having a private healthcare entity is odd because it's advocating for some form of central planning that is deferred to this private entity, but this private entity is not accountable to the public. And it really sort of begs the question of why is central planning okay when it's done by a private entity controlled by capital, but not when it's done by a public entity controlled by the people?
U.S. corporations, all corporations already practice centralized planning. You know this. If you work in a corporation, you've seen it happen. You see that the budget planning starts in like July, and then they have to go into the board after they decide how much money they're going to give each area, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then it gets pushed to the board, and the board approves it, and then they push it back down. But it's all based on how much money is projected to come in, how much money they think they're going to have for the year, how many people do they really need, right? It's all essentially planned. What are the resource requirements for the year or two, you know, to build up? So you're already used to it at the corporate level. It's just that, I guess, it's a sin when the government's trying to do it.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.